Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Sources familiar with the matter have informed me that today is Friday. Less reliable sources have informed me it's the 9th of October. I only say that because I'm not convinced. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here. I don't think I'm convinced either.
Yeah, I'm not sure I believe it's October. But, you know, it's partly Starbucks' fault for debuting pumpkin spice in August or something. So, like, nobody has any concept of time anymore. I don't think that's helping. but I'm also not into pumpkin spice, and I do not look forward to your letters on that topic. for everyone else, it is Friday, which means it is Security Friday, as per tradition, and we have a lot of things to talk about today. So the first one is an update to Andrew and a piece that we talked about on a previous episode about the T2 security chip.
Yes, so there were some hackers that found a way to jailbreak the T2 chip, which of course is not good news. We have a little bit more details this week. So Caitlin Simpanyu, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from ZDNet. She's sharing a couple more details.
Okay.
So this jailbreak combines two other exploits that were first designed for jailbreaking iPhones, iOS devices. It's called Checkmate and Blackbird. And using the software called CheckRain, they're able to kind of dig into this chip a little bit. And this works because there is some similarities between T2 chips and iPhone hardware and software. And so since it is hardware-based, it's not something that can be patched. However, I also wanted to share some tweets by Will Strafik.
Okay.
He's in the security field. He has this app called Guardian, which is kind of acts like a firewall for iOS. So he points out that he thinks some of this news is overblown.
Okay.
So he says it's important to know, like, what is known about this hack and what we don't know about it. So he says the thing that is proven is that with physical access to a computer with this chip and enough time to reboot into the special DFU mode that it uses to apply Checkmate, one can boot arbitrary code on the T2. But then he says what we don't know yet is whether this sort of modifications to the chip can persist through a reboot. So essentially, he's saying that it doesn't sound like this is a remote hack. This requires physical access to your Mac. And what we don't know yet is whether this sort of thing will survive you just restarting it.
Right. And that's part of what we want to talk about here, is because a lot of times we get, you know, the first wave of this news and it sounds pretty bad, and it might be pretty bad, but bringing some of that into focus is a little bit better. And that's part of what we're doing with Security Friday, is making sure that, like, because there's a lot that goes into this, you know, physical access to the machine, being able to get into the machine in one way or another to be able to do what you want to do, and then be able to install this software so that you're able to, you know, so that you're able to get into it. So there's there's a lot more to it than that. So anyway, so we have more information to talk about with Apple and their security, or lack thereof, I guess I should say.
I see what you did there. So the news is that Apple's internal networks were hacked for 3 months, but it wasn't from malicious hackers. This was a group of security researchers doing this work for the Apple bug bounty program.
Okay.
But they found out, they found a lot of serious vulnerabilities within the networks that Apple uses within their own company. So they said they found a total of 55 vulnerabilities. I won't share the whole quote because it's long, but some of the things they found was They were able to launch a worm that was capable of automatically taking over someone's iCloud account. They were able to retrieve source code for some internal Apple projects. And they found a vulnerability that in core portions of their infrastructure that would allow an attacker to fully compromise both customer and employee applications.
Ooh.
So this is some pretty serious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they also say, these most of these vulnerabilities were patched very quickly. They mm-hmm. said Apple was able to patch some of them within a few hours, I think they said.
Wow.
And so they're getting paid for this as part of the bug bounty program. In my opinion, they're not getting paid enough. So mm-hmm. they say, so far the team has gotten 32 payments, which total a little over $288,000.
Wow.
Which is great, but
yeah.
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 Like, just given the severity of some of these.
Yeah. And the optics of it being...
Here's a cool million.
Yeah, and the optics of it being, you know, Apple's internal network, you know, yeah, that's not great. Especially considering how much Apple has been, you know, sort of out front with beating the security drum and the privacy drum and making sure on all of that, like, this isn't a great look.
Mm-hmm.
However, we do have some good news on that front, because while Apple's internal networks maybe aren't the greatest, it seems like their hardware actually might be.
Yeah, so Charlotte wrote this up. According to a survey of 1,500 IT and InfoSec professionals, which was conducted by a market research firm, Vanson Bourne, mm-hmm. as well as an Apple company called Jamf. They do enterprise management software for that lets companies manage Macs in bulk.
Yes.
And this survey said 77% of these organizations using both Macs and non-Mac devices view those made by Apple as the most secure out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that 57% of organizations that are mostly non-Mac, they still have the same view that they think Macs are more secure.
Yeah. This was interesting, because it was nice to see that it's recognized even by people who, like you said, aren't primarily a Mac shop, right? So, Jamf is really nice software that allows you to manage system updates and application updates, enforce policies on machines, so, you know, make sure everybody has all the right software installed in order to do what they want to do, that kind of thing. The thing I enjoyed in this article was 84% of respondents whose companies use various kinds of devices said if they had to choose one, it'd be macOS.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was very, very interesting, to be honest. Just, you know, if we had to settle on one, it would be macOS was pretty interesting to me. And you know, there's a lot of security features that come with something from Apple out of the box. And I think part of that, like we always talk about on the show, is awareness. You know, when you go through the initial setup of a machine, I've had to do a bunch of these lately in my day job, helping people set up new computers. So that's part of why I was like, oh yeah, I could see that. You know, you have to turn on like sharing information with developers. Do I want to turn on Find My Mac? Do I want to turn on, you know, sharing information back with Apple? Like if you're, you know, if things crash or whatever, do you want to share the system reporting? You know, do you want to turn on Siri? Do you want to turn on location services? All of those, like, you have to go through all of that information, and it's up to the person in front of the machine to decide, like, this is on, that's off, I don't want this, I do want that, I think this would be helpful, whatever. So I think there's something to that, and it was very interesting to hear basically everybody say, if I had to pick one, it'd be a Mac. So that was pretty nice.
And I think as part of that setup process, one of the biggest ones is, do I want to turn on FireVault? Because turning that on is one of the most secure things you can do on a Mac, because that is what encrypts your hard drive. And if you can encrypt it right from the very beginning, that's even better.
Yeah, you get that option right at the start, which is also very nice. We will probably be digging into FireVault more in the future, particularly with the advent of a new operating system we know is coming our way soon. We will definitely be talking about File Vault more in the future. So if you have input on that, if you would like to find out more about it, or if you have other security things you want to make sure that we talk about on Security Friday, you can get us at observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, or by leaving comments in the show notes. Now, speaking of Apple specifically and security and privacy, there are a few people that kind of think maybe they're falling down a little bit on what they need to be implementing on iOS.
Yes, and we've definitely talked about this before. So very briefly, a feature included in iOS 14 is it's built-in anti-tracking. It's a redesign of the old advertising identifier. Mm-hmm. So apps now have to ask you if you want to be tracked, and you can say yes or no, or you can make it so that they can't ask at all and can't track at all. Mm-hmm. Because of some outcry from advertising companies,
Facebook,
Apple said they would be Facebook. They're going to be delaying this feature until early 2021. But some other organizations, some privacy advocates, they sent a letter, an open letter to Tim Cook. Mm-hmm. And these are organizations like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Human mm-hmm. Rights Watch, Amnesty International. They are saying, please, please don't wait. Turn this on. You guys have a good track record when it comes to privacy. Enabling this will improve that track record. So please turn it on as soon as possible, which is that's what they're saying.
And we've dug into that on, like Andrew said, we've dug into that on previous episodes and sort of the saga of making this happen. Since word on the street is it's October right now, turning it on in early 2021 isn't dramatic, but I do agree, like, we should have got it as part of iOS 14 to begin with. And you know, advertising is an interesting thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more in the future as well, as people try to get around the thing that makes it so that you can't track me everywhere I go. But speaking of tracking people everywhere they go, I didn't even mean for that to be as smooth a transition as it was, which I completely screwed up by pointing it out. We have the IRS under investigation for location data.
Yes, the IRS, they're being investigated for using and collecting location data without a warrant. So let's see who wrote this up. Vice. So they looked into this. They said... It was some company providing them called Ventel. Mm-hmm. The quote that I shared, it says, the IRS's attempts were not successful because the people the IRS were looking for weren't even included in the data set that they had.
Okay.
But just because they did use it without a warrant, the legal justification for that remains unclear. And so now they're being investigated.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, of course, the IRS needs to be looking at people's location data on their devices. I mean, that just makes sense. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear. I am absolutely kidding. I'm not only there's a whole bunch of things that I found objectionable with this bit of news. How the IRS got a hold of it, why the IRS is using location data to find people, you know, like, there's a whole lot. So we will dig into this as we find out more. I'm assuming at some point the results of the investigation will become public. We can maybe talk about it then. It's definitely something we are going to watch. So we have more location data to talk about in a minute. But first, I'd like to take a minute and tell you about our sponsor this week. And our sponsor this week is Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile has made it a whole lot easier to break up with your old wireless provider. They're the first company to sell premium wireless service online only. And now they have an unlimited data plan for $30 a month. Again, unlimited data and unlimited talk and unlimited text for $30 a month. So how much is your soon-to-be ex wireless provider charging you? If you are interested in doing this, here are the other things you need to know. Part of the reason that Mint Mobile can offer at this kind of price is because they are online only. They don't have any retail staff, retail stores, retail rent space to pay. And so they're passing all of that on to you. Everything is unlimited talk and text. Like I said, high speed data. You get to use your own phone number. You can just port it over to Mint Mobile. So you get to keep your same phone number, your same phone, your contacts, your apps, your games. You're not going to lose Angry Birds, whatever it is that you're doing. All of that's the same. And if you move and you don't like it, Mint Mobile has you totally covered with a 7-day money back guarantee. I will tell you, I switched. The actual process was a snap. Everything just shows up to your house in the mail. It's pretty great. So you can break up with Big Wireless and switch to Mint Mobile's unlimited data for $30 a month. The way you do that is by going to mintmobile.com/TDO. Get your new wireless unlimited plan for $30 a month and get it shipped to your door for free at mintmobile.com/TDO, mintmobile.com/TDO. And we'd like to thank them for sponsoring the show today. Now, the thing we want to talk about at the end of the show, we like, you know how we love a practical tip. We wanted to talk a little bit about location data. And the way that this started was with a piece about DuckDuckGo's new service offering.
Yes. So we can end on good news. Hooray.
Yay.
So DuckDuckGo announced, if you don't know who they are, it's a privacy search engine. Okay. A while ago, I think earlier this year, they added a way to embed Apple Maps on their website. Mm-hmm. And now they did that a little bit further. So now, still using Apple Maps, people using DuckDuckGo can search for directions and plan out their travel routes right on DuckDuckGo. And have, nice. You know, everything private. And this is good news, but also I think it's a practical tip because Apple Maps itself is private, but if you don't have an Apple device, you can't use it. And DuckDuckGo having this as a sort of web version of Apple Maps is pretty great because it means, you know, if you're on Android or a Windows PC or Linux, whatever, you'll still be able to use Apple Maps in a kind of a limited capacity, but it's still great.
Yeah, and it's nice to have it's nice to have the option available to you, you know, particularly if you don't want to use Google Maps for anything. And it feels like, you know, the Apple Maps stuff, like, I know we've made jokes about Apple Maps, and I know that there's been a lot of conversation about it in the past, but it feels like MapKit, anyway, is pretty solid, and it gives people, you know, the opportunity to use something that might look familiar and not have to use Google Maps to do it. Again, you know, tracking all your information. So that's pretty nice. I mean, overall, I'm into it. So one of the other things we wanted to talk about a little bit was just location data in general, because you may have noticed I started noticing it more with iOS 14, I think, but I saw a fair amount of it on iOS 13. And that's this occasional dialogue that pops up on your phone that says, hey, this app has requested your location or used your location information X number of times in the last 2 days or 3 days. Do you want to keep doing that? Is that okay with you? And I don't let a lot of stuff have my location in the first place. So for the most part, what it's reminding me of is I already agreed to say that thing could have my location information. So go ahead and keep doing that. But it's nice to have that option. So if you're seeing that, that's just sort of Apple reminding you. And they do go away, you know, like... You know, after a time, you know, it happens when you first install an app that's got location information, you'll get it for, you know, I think a week or so. After that, you'll get a couple of reminders and then it kind of stops. So, you know, if you're getting them, it's not too big a deal. It'll go away soon enough. You don't have to worry about it. But it's an interesting idea, I think, in that it's just sort of reminding you, like, did you mean to do that? Andrew, you probably even let less stuff have your data than I do. I would imagine.
Yeah, probably. so we did see that in iOS 13. So what changed in iOS 14, you still see the same pop-up. But now what you can do, you have an option to, do you want the app to use your precise location, which is maybe good for, you know, a delivery app. You know, you want them to have your address. Mm-hmm. Or do you want the app to have just a fuzzy location? So, which is probably good for a weather app. You'll yeah. have a radius of just in your general area, you'll see location things. And I've noticed some apps, they don't like that. And so, for example, I called out Snapchat on Twitter the other day because... if you don't enable precise location on Snapchat, you can't use this maps feature that they have where you can see all your friends. Okay. Well, you can see your other friends, but you're in ghost mode. So even though that would still work with fuzzy location, none of your friends can see you.
Okay.
Which, yeah, I see you, Snapchat.
Yeah, I've wondered about the fuzzy location stuff because, yeah, like you said, like weather, I just need to know what it is in my vicinity. You know, nothing has ever been very good at actually telling me the weather at my house. So I haven't ever worried about that one too much. So I'm totally good with fuzzy location. I play a couple of Niantic games. So I play Pokemon Go and I play Wizards Unite. And both of those rely on location data. But I also know, at least to the best of my knowledge... they're not doing anything with that information.
Yeah.
So I am comfortable giving it to them until they end up on Security Friday. And once they're a news item, I'm going to have to stop playing them and I'm going to be very sad about that. But until then, like those are the biggest ones. So those are the ones I get reminded about is Pokemon Go and Wizards Unite. Like they're using your location information. Yeah, I didn't go anywhere, so it's fine, right? So I haven't worried about it too much, but... if you have questions about location data, as I said before, if you have questions about anything you hear on Security Friday or there's something that you would like for us to discuss, you can get us at observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, and leave comments in the show notes. I think that's going to do it for us today. So, Andrew, as always, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and have a good weekend, everyone.
Yes, I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.